This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
We're here in Sir Bernard Lovell's office here at Jodrell Bank, and Sir Bernard's kindly agreed to tell us a little bit about how Jodrell was involved in the various space missions that eventually led to the landing of the Americans on the moon in July 1969.
We ought to give a simple history that had a very simple scientific beginning. After the publication of a report by Sagi, the Council of International Unions proposed this being an international geophysical year in 1957. Sagi accepted this and suggested that every effort be made to launch what we now call a satellite.
Mm-hmm.
President Eisenhower said they agreed and they were going to launch a satellite, and a day later, Nesmianov said so were the Russians. Well, everybody believed that the Americans, nobody believed the Russians. And the answer is, and I wonder if this is genuine, that Eisenhower made a fatal error by ordering that the Americans would do this without any use of military technology and without any use of the Redstone rockets. Which had been developed by Werner von Braun for the army. He was heavily attacked, but he insisted that it be entirely a civilian project. The finance of it was totally inadequate, and the Russians, of course, had no inhibitions about that, and as soon as Khrushchev in August of 1957, announced, it was in the New York Times, that they had successfully tested an intercontinental missile against which there was no defense. I knew that this was the launching, going to be used for launching the Sputnik.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't all that secret.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a meeting in Colorado of ERSI, where Walter Hagen engaged with the American project, said that there would be a delay, and he gave a long lecture to a crowded room about this small so-called grapefruit satellite. And I said to him afterwards, I say, you know, Walter, you're going to lose the race. The Americans are about to launch a Sputnik. And his reply was, oh, nonsense. They have no idea how to do this.
Mm. The Russians are going to launch a Sputnik.
Yeah. The Russians had no idea how to do this. The Americans were quite unaware. But when they realized that this was no lump of old iron, that one of the senators said, they really turned to and put the money into science and technology. And then, of course, the moon race was fascinating.
So that was how it began. That was the really
yes.
At the outset, it was a scientific.
Then after the Russians got ahead, not only with their first Sputnik, but with the Dogleyka and with Gagarin, it was then that Kennedy made his famous announcement that within the next decade they would aim to put a man on the moon and return safely to Earth, and that started the race.
Mm.
And there's no doubt it was a race because. And it just happened that I had pretty high-level contacts, both with the Russians and the Americans, and I was always surprised at the caution of the Russians and the certainty of the Americans, certainty about everything.
Mm.
You know, they were not worried about radiation, and particularly... I used to say a lot with him. The man who was in detail charge of this program. He said, we needn't worry about things failing. Every operation is doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And then he added, except the liftoff from the moon. And he said, I must admit, if they press the button and nothing happens, there's nothing more we could do. Soviets, on the other hand, were extremely cautious. In reply to any question, when were they going to attempt to get a man on the moon, we will send a Russian to the moon when we are absolutely certain of getting him back safely.
Hmm. So how did you first hear about the Americans' plans to send a rocket to the moon?
I mean, the Americans, the Project A we were talking about was just sending a rocket to the moon.
Yeah.
Which the Soviets had already accomplished in September 1959, I think.
Mm, yes. That was...
That was a staggering feat for that age, yeah.
I hear that the Americans came to ask you specifically about perhaps using the telescope here at Jodrell Bank to track some of these early rockets, these early Project Able rockets.
Yeah. I mean, the star general, who came in great secrecy to see me, he said, "We want your help. We're going to send a rocket to the moon." And I said, "You can't possibly." He said, "On the other hand, we've just tested Project Able."
Mm.
And I said, "Well, what do you want us to do?" He said, "Well, if we can send a rocket to the moon, we can't track it. We want you to track it." That's how that happened.
Mm. And you mentioned the Russian, it was Lunik 2, I think, that was in September of 1959, that was the first rocket to ever reach the moon, having been the first people to put a satellite into space and the first people to put a dog into space and so on. They were the first people to hit the moon.
Man in space.
Absolutely, they were first all the way through. I mean, what was Jodrell's involved? How did Jodrell get involved in Lunik 2? Did you receive signals here?
I'll tell you exactly what happened. It was a Saturday afternoon like this, and I was the captain of the Chelford Cricket Club, and suddenly at lunchtime, the house telephone and the telephone from the controller rang, and they said, "What are you going to do?" Because the Americans were here, you see, in connection with Project Able. And I'm going to do nothing. I'm going to play cricket. So I did play cricket that afternoon. But when we finished cricket, I thought, right, I had phoned J.G. Davis. And I said, "Look, with this extraordinary situation, I think we ought to go back to Jodrell and see if there's anything." So I opened the door of the office, and there were yards and yards of what was then telex, giving us, amazingly, the exact coordinates for Jodrell Bank at which we could locate this probe.
Mm-hmm. This is from the Russians?
From Russia, from Moscow.
Mm.
So we climbed up the telescope and were actually in the swinging laboratory. I think Palmer had an observation on at the time, and we retuned the receiver and got the probe without any difficulty. And then... the next day was Sunday. Well, we acquired it as soon as it came above the horizon. We tracked it all day. It's the crowds pressing and everything was right around us. About 9:30 at night, or shortly before that, it was J.G. Davis who had the brilliant inspiration of measuring the Doppler shift.
Mm.
And so we knew exactly when the probe began to accelerate towards the moon.
Mm.
And this came at a most extraordinary time, just as the 10 o'clock news on the BBC was going out. And I think impact occurred 2 minutes past 10 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So the rocket's transmitting a signal at a particular frequency back to Earth. You can measure its velocity.
You'll find those curves. There's a Nature paper which shows those curves.
Mm.
Now, it was simple. It was the first time it had been done, and you know, this technique, it was a brilliant idea of Davis, and set the example for everything that has been done subsequently for that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what was particularly important is that there are many Americans who would not believe it, and they argued that the Soviets had put an alarm clock in.
Mm.
Well, when we produce acceleration curves, you know, they had no grounds for that at all.
This was an alarm clock to sort of cut the signal off at some instant, as if it had hit the moon, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know that you went on and I think you received signals from the first Soviet mission, the first rocket to circle the moon and take photographs of its far side, was actually just a month later, actually. Yeah. And Jodrell again picked up signals from that rocket, I believe.
Yeah.
But then I think you then went back. I mean, you sort of, the history of Jodrell's involvement in the space race seemed to be sort of working with both the Americans and the Russians, mm-hmm. at various points. And I think then there was a big involvement in what had become the Pioneer missions originally Project Able. So yeah. Pioneer 5. Yeah. That was the story of Jodrell's involvement there.
Yes, and the story of how that saved Jodrell. Pioneer 5 was originally designed as a probe for Venus.
Hmm.
But I think in the end they gave that up, and the power in the probe expired. I got the figure somewhere when it was an enormous distance from Earth. The most exciting part of all of that, though, was sending the signal out from the telescope a few minutes after the probe had been launched from Cape Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
and this melt or fuse the bolts mm-hmm. holding the payload to the carrier rocket, and that worked perfectly.
So Jodrell Bank was actually controlling this rocket the Americans launched
from
Kennedy. Mm-hmm. So when you mentioned, intriguingly, you mentioned that was the mission that saved Jodrell Bank. How did that come about?
Well, of course, it was headline news in all the newspapers, and this control of the rocket, of the probe. We didn't have people like you then, and press officers and so on. All the bloody telephone calls came to mind, and the day after, I'm absolutely fed up of answering the telephone.
Hmm.
But the secretary, I think it was Anthony Hollins, said, "Look, there's another telephone call. You better take it." So I said, "Oh, put it through." And the voice said, "Is that President Lovell?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, my name is Slingerly. I am Lord Nuffield's private secretary, and his lordship wishes to speak to you." So Lord Nuffield came on the telephone and said, "How much money is owing on that telescope of yours?" And I said, I felt a bit confused. I said, "I think it's about £80,000. And he said, "Is that all? I'll send you a check, pay it off." And I tried to thank him. And he said, "Well, that's all right, my boy, you haven't done too badly." So that was the end of our many, many years of
trouble. I was going to say, I mean, that was debt left over from a period four years earlier, back when the telescope was being constructed. Amazing. Because, I mean, that wasn't, because of course doing these space missions wasn't the primary aim of the telescope, of course. This was, you know, it was a side issue in a way, wasn't it? Because it was doing astronomy. So.
Well, the interesting thing is that I think throughout the whole of that period, the operational time of the telescope used on the space probes and so on was about 15%.
Right.
And the rest was, well, it was during that period that Palmer made the measurements which led to the search, which was fundamental in the discovery of quasars.
Yeah. Working our way forward in the story of getting people to the moon, I think the next, one of the next big steps was to land a spacecraft on the moon. So, talked about the Russians hitting the moon with a rocket in 1959, but in 1966, they actually landed Luna 9 or Lunik 9 on the surface of the moon and sent back pictures. And again, Jodrell had a major role there, didn't it? Tell us a little bit about that night when those pictures were received.
The probe landed, and then within a very short time the signal started again, and they were very odd. And J.G. Davis, a flash of genius, he said, "Look, Those are signals, picture facsimile signals. Let's ring up the one of the newspapers and see if we can borrow a machine," which we did.
So this was one of these early fax machines that was So with that was just plugged into the receiver and out came a picture of the moon.
Yeah. Yeah. we were madly, wrongfully accused of issuing these pictures before the Russians.
Right.
I couldn't help it. I mean, this happened the next day, when I coming out of the dark room, the whole place was crowded with reporters and photographers. So that they photographed, I mean, I walked through
them. So you carry in the picture.
In fact, the Russians were never annoyed. General Blagomirov, who was in charge of the mission, when I subsequently met him, he was not annoyed at all that we'd published the photographs before the Russians. In fact, he said, our trouble is they have to go through so many ranks and ranks, and that causes a delay. He said, but we were very angry with you because you published them with the wrong scale.
So what was the problem? Why was the scale wrong?
Well, because we did not know that our facsimile machine had a different thread from that of the Russians.
Different pitch of thread or something. So it came at a different speed.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was a bit.
So our photographs published in Nature are show what were really fairly rounded features. Yeah. Peaked.
They were a bit wrong aspect ratio. But that's that's amazing, isn't it? Eavesdropping on the transmission back to Earth and publishing the first ever pictures taken from the surface of the Moon. Okay, I mean, we should probably get to 1969 and have a chat about what happened during that when the Apollo astronauts were making their heading on the way to the Moon. I mean, Jodrell didn't have a official role in tracking these Apollo missions,
no,
did it?
You see, all the vital events happened when the probe was below our horizon. When Armstrong stepped onto the surface of the Moon, we only had that as broadcast by the Americans.
Yeah.
The Moon was below our horizon.
Yeah. But what actually happened here then with the Apollo 11 mission? What were you tracking at the time?
We followed the Apollo 11 mission whenever it was above our horizon. And then, of course, the President of the United States had particularly asked the Soviets not to do anything to interfere with the landing and takeoff operations, and would they please not launch any probes to the Moon, which they completely disregarded, and launched Lunik 15. And so we naturally had that in our sights all the time until the remarkable afternoon.
Mm. So tell me a little bit what happened on that afternoon.
You see, originally they were going to stay in the landing module until the following day.
Mm.
But then they sought permission and got it to step out pretty quickly. And this happened in the something like 2 or 3 a.m. our time. Even so, I believe there are about 5,000 people here. I mean, the whole of the fascination then was when we realized that the Russians were trying to land their own probe. And furthermore, the indications from the daughter ship was that they were going to do this pretty close to where Armstrong and Aldrin were. I think in the next valley. You know, damn nerve when you think of it. But just think of the political chaos if anything had happened.
So this was obviously an unmanned probe that the Russians had sent. And
an unmanned probe,
yeah,
which was designed to return lunar soil automatically, which it did, a subsequent one did less than a year later. And if it had happened on the first occasion, they would have been first to have the lunar rocks on Earth.
If the Apollo 11...
Even if Armstrong and Aldrin had successfully. And if Armstrong and Aldrin had failed...
Yeah,
and that was that disaster.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been a demonstration of their the sense of the decision to do it remote robotically rather than sending people. I guess, yeah. So this spacecraft was supposed to land, collect a sample, take off again, come back to Earth.
That's right.
But what did the Jodrell signals show? In fact, happened.
Well, on the first probe, which you say was Lunar 15. the sickness just stopped. We were observing the acceleration towards the lunar surface, and so we knew it was going to land.
Mm.
And the calculations were it was going to land pretty well where Armstrong and Aldrin were. Mm. And then the sickness suddenly stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And now, what went wrong, I do not know. They maybe something from our recorders to help them to decide.
Right. Because you say, straight after the signal stopped, just after a recording finishes, I think, you got a phone call.
Yeah.
Who was it who was on the phone?
I think it was Keldysh, the president of the Academy. And
so the Russian Academy.
Yeah, and I said, we'd put them in the right direction. And the reply was, no. We want them immediately. Our representative is already in an aeroplane. He will be landing at Manchester Airport at 5:15 or sometime like that. Mm. Would you please make sure that your copy of our signals is with your representative in hand and hand them to him? And I asked Commander Towson, who was then our chief engineer, to do this, which he did.
Mm.
And he went to Ringway and said, yes, this Russian came. They didn't even go through any formalities. Just handed them over to us.
And did you hear any more about anything about what happened to the tapes and what the...
No.
That was it?
No, not the details of that.
Mm. That's an amazing story.
Going back to the... When I said that the telex message, when the first impact in September 1959, I found that quite extraordinary. And many, many years later, the Russian who was in charge of that program, he said, well, don't you realize we depended entirely on you to track that probe?
So they couldn't track it themselves at all.
Couldn't track it themselves. But
launched it in the right direction.
They had this peculiar, peculiar method of making sure we tracked it.
So they just headed it off in the right direction at the right speed and relied on you to tell them it got there.
Yeah.
I just listening to some of your interviews, actually, around the time just following the successful return of the Apollo 11 crew to Earth. There was a quote you said that if things go as they should, within 10 years we'll have a base on the moon and maybe an observatory. Within 20 years we'll have sent people to Mars. Now, of course, that didn't happen.
They disbanded the incredible organization which led to the success of Apollo and sacked Wernher von Braun.
Right.
Extraordinary. I mean, if they really followed this up and gave Wernher von Braun his what he wanted to do, the situation on getting to Mars might have been entirely different.
Mm. And why do you think, do you have any feel for why you think
you
that
see,
decision was made?
First of all, the Americans got a bit fed up with, Apollo 11 and then 12 and 13. Mm. Well, 13 was an narrow escape. And then 14, 15, 16. They became a bit bored with that.
Mm.
And the other thing is, they never forgot that Wernher von Braun was once their enemy.
Mm. So what do you feel now about this talk of revitalizing missions to the moon? Of course, there are current and very recent successful missions, missions back to the moon. Is that something that you think?
I think that's a great way to do it. They will, they will establish a base on the moon and launch the probe to Mars from the moon. Yeah.
Yeah. What are the main reasons for setting out on this, these sorts of missions, do you feel?
It's a very interesting point, isn't it? Was a tremendous demonstration of human courage. Actually, scientifically, I have more doubts than I had originally. Mm. So much has been accomplished by probes, on manned probes, as you know, in revealing the features of the solar system. that I very much doubt if man landing would have given any enhancement. And of course, there was always the trouble with the man landing about the fact that they themselves would poison the situation on Mars or whatever.
Mm. One of the things that's often said about the Apollo missions was that it wasn't about discovering another celestial body as much as it was about discovering the Earth. This whole idea that when these people, they went out there and they could see the Earth, you could see, you know, you could stand on the moon and raise a hand and your gloved thumb would cover every other human being other than the people there.
The other point was the military aspect. You see, I mean, the hawks in the Pentagon, they argued that any devastating attack by nuclear weapons on the Soviets would never take place if they had control of the moon, if America had control of the moon, because they would know that they would be similarly bombarded 24 hours later. So all this was very, very, very tense and mixed up.
I believe you've met some of the Apollo astronauts. Did you meet Buzz Aldrin at one point?
Yeah. Armstrong.
And Armstrong.
I saw Armstrong several times. I remember we stayed in the same motel near Kennedy for Apollo 13. And we were in a long queue to pay for breakfast. We were next to one another. He became an ordinary man. It's an extraordinary story.
Yeah. Is it something that you'd ever like to have done? Would it have been something you'd, if you'd ever had the opportunity, would you have put on a spacesuit, got in one of those rockets, gone to the moon?
I might have done when I was young. But you see, when this became possible, I was already more interested in being on Earth and seeing, observing what happened.
Well, thank you, Sir Bernard, for coming along here and talking to us about Jodrell's involvement in the race to the moon. That was very nice of you. Thank you very much.